Okay, hi everybody. Shalom. How's it going? How are you doing? Guys, a long day. A lot of learning, no? This is intense. I mean, we learn on Mechlelet also, but this is like, whoa. This is next level. I'm going to tell the girls, we got some good shidduchim lined up. This is very, very serious. So just so I know, like, where we're up to. So this is it? This is the last shiur of the night? Last official shiur of the night? So how many hours did we learn today? 5, 6, 1.5. Played some ball. You guys eat also? There's eating involved? Sleeping a little? A couple of minutes here or there? Okay, all right, so let's finish strong. You know, the Gemara says in Brachos that everything goes by the chasima. Everything depends on the, you know, how you close out the game. Right? You could be up by a lot, but if your pitcher can't close out the game, so no pressure on me to close out the game. But it's important, you know, at the end of the day, We have to finish strong. We have to finish the day strong. So I know it's been a long day, and I'm sure it's been a hot day, and I'm sure everyone's tired, but we're here, Baruch Hashem, learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And don't take that for granted. Don't take that for granted. It goes really fast, and it's an amazing summer. It's a big schus to be here. All right, let's start from the beginning. What were the first words that Hashem ever said to the Jewish people? Hashem's big speech. Hashem's about to introduce himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to talk. Aseres HaDibros, we left Mitzrayim, we're standing at our Sinai. You know? The valedictorian has to get up and say, you know, Birshua, the bar mitzvah boy, Birshua, my parents, my rabbayim. Right? But then he begins his drasha. Like, what's Hashem's opening line at our Sinai? No? Help me out. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's where it all begins. I am Hashem your God. Talking about Amunah tonight. Different themes of Amunah. I think that's the theme, no? That's the overarching theme. Different elements of Amunah. So it all starts with Amunah. It all begins with Amunah. Hashem says, I am Hashem your God, which according to many is the pasuk, is the phrase that introduces us to the mitzvah, the responsibility of what? Of believing in Hashem. Someone ask Akasha on those three words. I am Hashem, your God. Does that sound like a mitzvah to you? Did anyone talk about this already tonight? Be honest, if I'm sounding repetitive. That's not a mitzvah. What kind of mitzvah is that? What does a mitzvah sound like? A mitzvah sounds like, don't wear shatnas. A mitzvah sounds like, on the first day of Sukkot, l'kachtem lachem, Yishus Harav, thank you very much for inviting me. L'kachtem lachem bayom harishon. Hashem tells you to do something. Take for yourself, on the first day, a pre-Eitz Hadar, right. Take a lulav, take an esrog. That sounds like a mitzvah. Don't cook milk and meat. That sounds like a mitzvah. Guard the Shabbos. That sounds like a mitzvah. Sit in a sukkah. Blow the shofar. There's sukkim in the Torah that sound like a mitzvah. And then there's this opening mitzvah, this all-encompassing mitzvah that doesn't even sound like a mitzvah. When I say it doesn't sound like a mitzvah, it doesn't sound like a tzibur. There's no command. It's just a statement. I am Hashem, your God. Okay. You say so. I am Hashem, your God. Why is Hashem not commanding us to believe in Hashem? What's the Kodesh Baruch Hu hinting to when he says, I am Hashem, your God? Why not say, I command you to believe in me? So you could say, as some say, you can't really command someone to believe. In other words, once you buy into the system, right? Once you accept, your wallets are probably filled with shkalim by now. But I imagine some of you started off with dollars, right? On the money, it says, in God we trust. The bitachon. If you ever need a little chizuk, you know? People ask, like, what's a good safe for to learn to work on my bitachon? Just, like, take out your wallet, pull out a dollar, and remind yourself that the founding fathers of America believed in Hashem. You're not going to believe in Hashem? I don't know if they would still write on the money today. The world has evolved a bit, you know? But Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael still believes. But so what's the anoch? Anoch Hashem? I am Hashem, your God. So again, so some explain, and it's a reasonable explanation, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm making a statement, if you're willing to opt into this, and you accept me as your creator, then I can start making demands. Then I can say, take a lulav. Then I can say, blow a shofar. Then I can say, keep Shabbos. Then I can say, don't wear Shabbos. But until you accept me, I can't, what right do I have to command you? I go over to someone I've never met before tonight, and I say, I command you to, I don't know, give me your wallet and your cell phone. Who are you? What do you, I don't owe you anything. Once we accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Rabbanu Shalom, so then he can start commanding. But there's something even deeper than that, I think. Tzaddikim explained, you know why Hashem said it as a statement, as a fact? Because it is a fact. See, Emunah is not something for a Jew, for a healthy Jew, healthy in body, healthy in mind, healthy in spirit. The reality of a Jew is that we do believe in Hashem. Hashem doesn't have to ask us to believe in Him, because if you're a functional Jew whose neshama has not been radically damaged by this world, the mitzias, the natural state of Jews, is emuna in Hashem. It's not like a hard thing. Bitachon is a hard thing. Who knows the difference between emuna and bitachon? How would you translate it?
Emuna is the understanding that Hashem is here. Bitachon is plugging it in and being real.
Exactly. Right? The way the Chazon Ish explains it, emuna is the theory. Bitachon is the practice. In English, faith. Do I believe that there is a God? Bitachon, do I trust? Right? Am I prepared to do something based on that? Right? I might believe in you, but I might not trust you enough to, you know, to fall backwards and trust that you'll catch me. Trust is the lamasa. Trust is the actual leaning into Hashem. Trusting that Hashem provides me with my well-being. Hashem provides me with my money. Hashem provides me with everything. And that's a different thing than just believing that he could, to believe that he does. That's a different thing. But emunah is so fundamental, so basic to a Jew. Hashem just says, "I'm Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God." And you know what everyone did when they were standing at our Sinai? You know why Hashem didn't have to command it? Everyone just nodded along. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's the natural state of a Jewish soul. It's the natural state of a healthy Jewish soul to believe in Hashem. But let's go to the end of the pasuk. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Who can finish the pasuk? I am Hashem your God. Who? Who took you out of Mitzrayim? Now we're going to see an incredible thing. Why is that part of the statement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, I exist, commanding us, not with the language of command, but commanding us to believe in Hashem? Hashem says, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim. So again, the Pashup shot, you'll say, is because that's our experience. How do we know that God is awesome? Because we just saw it. Dam, Tzardeya, Kinim, we saw it. We saw Kriyas Yamsuf. So of course we believe in you, Hashem. We saw it with our own eyes. But listen carefully. Rishonim already explained that part of the mitzvah of Amunah, this is what we need to talk about as we enter into Beis Menachem Av. We're in the 9 days. Let's not forget where we are. Yishenechlas Av, Mamatin, B'simcha. As one of the Mechlalik girls explained to me today, it's not that we're not supposed to be happy. It's also a word. We reduce our joy, but it means sometimes when we're too like jolly, we're not focused, we're not locked in. We're not thoughtful, we're not focused, we're not attentive, we're not paying attention. We have to wake up a little bit and start paying attention. That's what the 9 days is helping us to do. So let's pay attention to this puzzle. The first of the Aseret Hadibros. I am Hashem your God who took you out of Mitzrayim. Part of the mitzvah of Amunah is believing in what? The Rishonim explained. Part and parcel of the mitzvah of Amunah is believing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our Redeemer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only can save us, Hashem did save us, and Hashem will save us. In other words, part of believing in Amunah, in Hashem, is believing in Geula. It's right there, it's at the same pasuk. It's not a separate mitzvah to like believe in Mashiach. In the very first pasuk that Hashem, the first words out of Hashem's mouth, kiviyachol, at Har Sinai, I am Hashem your God, and I saved you in Mitzrayim. So you open up a chumash today, with the same parshas Yisro, you're sitting here in Tafshin Pei Gimel, Beis Menachem Av, and you're trying to understand what's the message here. It's the exact same message. The reality of a Jew, of a Jewish soul, is that not only do we believe in Hashem, we believe that Hashem can save us, and we believe that Hashem will save us. In other words, part of the mitzvah of Amunah is believing in Geula, and that's what we got to talk about. Chavra, that's what we have to talk about. We got a couple of days to figure it out. It's been 1,955 years and we still haven't figured it out. We've got to do something a little different. Someone asked me this week, no, because it's this time of the year, so you're supposed to say, like, you know, halavai, this year on Tisha B'Av, we won't sit on the floor, we won't we won't be mourning the Beis HaMikdash and we'll be celebrating. So someone said, like, you know, we say that, but like, do you actually believe that? I believe it and I don't believe it. I believe it because, of course, I believe it, but like, it's hard to believe. But it's also natural to believe it. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is natural. Asher Hatzeisicha Me'aretz Yisrael is natural. Believing in Geula is supposed to be a natural thing. It's not supposed to be some far out idea. We've seen it, we've experienced it, and we're going to experience it again. It's going to happen one time. You know what I do every year on Motzei Tisha B'Av? I've done it down in the last 12, 15 years. I have a little art scroll, Kinos. Yeah, Hebrew, English. It's hard poetry from, you know, from brilliant tzaddikim, the Kinos. I don't know what you're saying. So I have a nice little Hebrew, English one. Every year on Motzei Tisha B'Av, I write in the inside cover. And feel free to borrow this if you want. And I'm like, I didn't copyright it, I don't trademark on this. This is for, feel free to use it. I write on the inside cover, used for the last time, and I write the year. Tavshin Pei Beis. And the line above that says, used for the last time, Tavshin Pei Aleph. The line before that says, used for the last time, Tavshin Pei. And the year before that, used for the last time, Tavshin Ayin Tes. Right? They'll ask me, why do I do that? Right? Is it like a joke? There's going to be a time when we'll sit on the floor and hopefully it really was. Hopefully last year when I wrote, used for the last time, 2022, Tavshin Pei Beis. Hopefully it's true. It can still be true. We got time. We can make it happen. It can still be true. And if there's a part of us that says, yeah, but like, how did Mashiach work? How's that going to actually happen? I don't know exactly. But it's going to happen. It's as basic to our belief as Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's the second half of that same pasuk. That there's going to be a geula. It's going to happen. And I'll be able to take that kinos, which will be worthless at that point, Baruch Hashem. But it won't be worth this because I'll be able to show my children and my grandchildren, look, Mirtz Hashem, Halavai one day, look, show my friends, look, I believe that there's going to be, it's going to happen. It's hard to figure out how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. So Chaver, let's talk about what's so hard about believing in Mashiach. Because it's so natural on the one hand, but it's so hard on the other. And that's, you know, Rabbi Grejar made up the title of tonight's show. I don't even know what it's called. Something about like the missing thing in our life. The missing thing in our life is Mashiach. That's the missing piece. Right? You have good rebellion. You have good madricha. Food's okay. You know? Sports is good. Leagues are good. They're strong. Chaver plays ball seriously. You know? So what's we have? This is me'ein olam haba. You know? This is as good as it gets. If Shachter's coming, I saw our sacks. The Dolan walking around the campus. I mean, this is, well, like, what more do you want? Right? But we don't have Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Gula. We don't have a Kohen Gadol. Yom Kippur, we go through a Yom Kippur like, oh, that's like a vow, the Yom Kippur, like the davening was so powerful. However, Yom Kippur is broken. I hate to break it to you, Yom Kippur is a broken holiday. You know why? Because we don't have, read the Chumash, we don't have Yom Kippur. You've never had Yom Kippur in your life. Pesach, oh, the Seder is fast. Wow. You know? I made it, I stayed up all night, I said Shir Hashirim, best Pesach of my life. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm painting a picture of, you know, the best Pesach of my life. The greatest Pesach of my life. I don't know, the greatest Pesach of my life. Best Pesach of my life with my brothers. The best Pesach of my life. And then you take a step back and you say, no, it wasn't. Pesach is a broken holiday. We spend the whole night talking about the invisible carbon Pesach that we don't have on our table. So, you know, we like get into this state of being where like, yeah, like Baruch Hashem, you know? You can get a good shawarma. You can get a, you know? You can go to Katzefet. There's good things, you know? Ruchni is Gashmias, we have everything we have. It's all, the whole thing's broken. We're missing the main thing. We're missing the Karban Pesach. We're missing the centerpiece. We're missing the Kohen Gadol and Beis HaMikdash. So how do we get to that, right? How do we work on that? How do we believe in that? And really what I want to ask you, for the couple of minutes we have, is how do I not get frustrated? Because, Chaver, we all know the most frustrating thing in the world is waiting for something that you're expecting and it doesn't show up. We've all had that package from Amazon or that whatever that we're waiting for, or the teacher who promised that they're going to give back the final on Monday and now it's already Thursday and like you're anxious to get your grade already and like, oh yeah, tomorrow, maybe tomorrow. You order that package, right? You order that package online. I need to get this. I ordered whatever on Amazon. I need it just to get packed up for Kollel. Right? Don't worry, it'll be here on time. I've got time. It'll be here Thursday. I'm not leaving until early next week. Right, get the ID, you're tracking it, package has been shipped. All of a sudden, Tuesday morning, you're excited to get your package, an email, pops up, your package has been delayed. It'll be there Thursday. A little frustrated, you're excited. Whatever that thing that you wanted so badly, you needed so badly. Thursday rolls around, another email, your package is missing. Missing was that? I gotta get the cola. I'm getting on a plane to Eretz Yisrael in a couple of days. All right, so you call up the company, what's with the package? It's, I don't know, we're working on it. Well, I gotta go, and can you ship out another one? No, the company policy is we can't, send another one until we figure out what happened to the first one. You can order another one if you want. Why should I order another one? You guys messed up my package. And you're waiting, and then it's delayed, and it's lost, and it's the most frustrating thing in the world. When you're anticipating something, and it doesn't happen for 1,955 years, that's slightly frustrating, no? Slightly frustrating. So you start to give up hope. You start to say, whatever, I know it's a thing, but there's nothing I can do about it. Chafetz Chaim couldn't figure it out. Vilna Gaon didn't figure it out. Baal Shem Tov didn't figure it out. As we're here in the previous year, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov didn't figure it out. No one figured it out, so now I'm going to figure it out. So whatever. When it comes, it comes. Maybe my lifetime, maybe not. What am I going to do about it? And the Gemara is sensitive to this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, such strong language against the person who predicts when Mashiach is going to come. The Gemara in two places in Shas says that the world is going to last no more than 6,000 years. But then the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, you're not allowed to predict when Mashiach is going to come. Remember the scene, Yaakov's on his deathbed, Bikesh Yaakov Legalis Asakates? Yaakov wants to reveal when Mashiach is coming to his children. Hashem takes it away from you. You're not allowed to do that. And the Gemara is sensitive. The Gemara says, you know why? Because what happens if I told you? What happens if I told you that when I was post-high school, spending my year in Israel, Shana Aleph, in Tavshin Samach in the year 2000, which was 23 years ago, that sounds crazy to me. What if I told you I walked into Sfarim stores and there were all these little kuntres, little pamphlets? Because Tavshin Samach, the year 2000, was a big year for Geula. Everyone was talking about all sorts of signs and indications in the Zohar and in Sefer Kabbalah. This is going to be the year. You could buy booklets and books, little books, about all the proofs that Mashiach is going to come. Gemara says, bad idea. You know why? Because what happens when it's 2001 and Mashiach didn't come? Klal Yisrael feels cheated. We feel crushed. The Gemara says, the bones of a person who predicts the Kates should rot. That's how serious it is. And the Gemara says it explicitly. You don't need the Rashi. The Gemara says, because when it doesn't happen, when you think it's going to come and it doesn't happen, people are going to lose hope. Now, you'll ask Akasha that maybe you've heard throughout history there are all sorts of predictions. Interesting predictions. Very interesting predictions. The year 1860, a lot of tzaddikim said the year 1860 was going to be the Gula. There was one tzaddik, the Rebbe of Jikov. He said, I guarantee Mashiach's not coming in 1860. Took a stand. Mashiach's not coming in 1860. All the other tzaddikim said Mashiach's coming. No, I guarantee Mashiach's not coming in 1860. So they asked him, well, why are you doing that? I showed him the sources. It's a ripe time for Gula. He said, just think about it for a second. Everyone's saying 1860, 1860. What's going to happen if Mashiach doesn't come? What's going to happen if Mashiach does come? He says, if Mashiach does come, you know what they're going to say about me? The one guy who bet on the wrong horse? Lahavdo? They're going to say, the Jikov Rebbe is not a real tzaddik. That's what they're going to say about me. Okay, so Mashiach will be here, so it'll be fine. So I'll take the heat. He says, but what happens if Mashiach doesn't come? And everyone said Mashiach is coming, Klai is going to be crushed. So at least let me take a position that gives people the chance to say, not every tzaddik said, there was one tzaddik who didn't say. Give Klai a little bit of hope. The predictions are fascinating. 1913. The Malbim based on Psukim and Daniel Perakid Beis, 1913 is going to be Mashiach. It wasn't Mashiach, but it was World War I. Told us Yaakov Yosef, first Hasidus Sefer published ever, student of the Baal Shem Tov. Mashiach's coming in 1940. Not Mashiach, but World War II. The dates were not wrong. Right? The tzaddikim were tapping into something very deep. But it wasn't it. But there's a tremendous danger. You get excited about something, you get hopeful for something, and it doesn't happen. Yeah, please. The dates came from all sorts of sources. Right? Some based on passages in the Zohar. Again, like I mentioned, some based on Psukim in the 12th chapter of the book of Daniel, which has all sorts of mysterious Psukim. Right? But tzaddikim looked at different indications to try to figure out when it could be. They're very fascinating. But the halachas, you're not allowed to do that. The Rambam paskins like the Gemara. The Gemara says, don't do it. The Rambam says, halacha lamasa. The halacha is you're not allowed to do it. And then the Rambam writes a letter and he writes, well, you know, I'm not allowed to do this, but I have a family tradition that Mashiach's coming in the 1200s. Well, that didn't work. Right. So they work on that sugya, like why were tzaddikim offering dates if it was not really appropriate to offer dates? Some say the Malbim gave a mashal. The Malbim said, you ever go on a trip, you know, like, say you're going on a trip with, you know, with a young child. I picture a mother and a daughter going on a trip together, father and a son going on a trip together. An older brother and a younger sibling going on a trip together. That's a long trip. Picture the old days, you're traveling by wagon, you're going through the forest. So you're traveling and you're traveling. Imagine, you know, it's a long trip. Imagine, like 5 minutes into the trip, right? The kid turns to his dad or his mom or his older brother or whoever it is and says, are we there yet? And you're like, whoa, hold on. We're not going to be asking that question for a while, right? We like just left. Someone told me when they came to Eretz Yisrael this summer, they said that when the plane like started to move to take off, their little kid said to them, did we just land? Like, we didn't even take off yet. We're not even in the area. Right, so settled. Ah, oh, wow. Yeah, yes, yes, Brother Josh, yes, for sure. My brother Josh. That's for David. Okay, and I got all three Weinbergs in one room. And now Mashiach can come. Okay, great. Yeah, so the Malbim said, the Malbim gave this mashal, so the kid, like 2 minutes into the journey, he's like, are we there yet? Like, kid, settle in, stop asking that question. That's an inappropriate question for the next 3 months, you know? Like, we're traveling on some boat to cross the ocean. So they get a little bit closer, and the father turns to the captain of the ship, to the wagon driver, and says, so, are we getting close? And the kid's like, oh! Oh, am I not allowed to ask that question? So the adult explains to the child, 5 minutes into the journey, you're not allowed to ask that question. But when you sense that you're getting close, when you have a sense of how the journey plays out, when you're getting close to the end, you can start talking about that question. So the Malbim said, maybe that's, you know, when the Gemara said, don't talk about it, the Gemara knew we'd be sitting here in 2023, right? And it hadn't come yet. Mashiach's not here. We're still waiting. But as you get closer, we can talk about it more openly. All right, different explanations. But chever, the feeling of waiting and wanting, of hoping, can be crushing. Who's heard of Viktor Frankl? You've heard of Viktor Frankl? By show of hands. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. Man's Search for Meaning, a very powerful book. Holocaust survivor. He tells a story in his book. He says when he was in Auschwitz, he had a friend. A friend who before the war was a very, very fine person, very intelligent person, very successful person. Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they robbed him of his life. Listen to what happened. He said that my friend in the concentration camp started having these crazy dreams, these very vivid dreams, that on March 30th, 1943, I don't remember exactly, the year was 1943, I don't remember if that was the exact date, you'll play along. March 30th, 1943, we're going to be liberated, we're going to be saved. Now, when you have a dream, it's always interesting. When you have a dream that's like very clear with a specific date, that's really interesting. When you have that like 5-10 nights in a row, like you keep having the same dream, that's a sign from Hashem. This friend kept having this dream over and over. March 30th, 1943, we're going to go out. March 30th, 1943, we're going to be saved. Viktor Frankl describes a March of 1943 as the date got closer and closer, the friend started getting really antsy. Because it didn't look like the war was ending anytime soon. It didn't look like they were going to be freed. If anything, it looked like their lives were falling apart more and more. He said March 20th came, March 25th came. March 28th came, he said my friend was going out of his mind. And when the mental state is weakened, the body is weakened. He said my friend was diagnosed with typhus. March 28th, he was already burning up with a fever. March 29th, he was hanging between life and death. And March 30th, 1943, Viktor Frankl says my friend died. And he said those who understood they didn't die because of typhus. He died from a broken heart. He died because he had all his eggs in one basket that on March 30th, 1943, he was going to go free. And then Viktor Frankl writes something so powerful and so painful at the same time, which is what? His dream came true. He was liberated on March 30th, 1943. He was freed from his suffering at the hands of the Nazis on March 30th, 1943. So the Neshama went back to Shemayim and he didn't suffer anymore. But that's the danger. Why did he die? He died because he believed in something so deeply that when it didn't happen, it broke him. And that's, we have this deep fear of wanting to believe in Mashiach because we just don't want to get hurt. We don't want to be burnt. We don't want to be left behind. So, Chaver, let me tell you a medrash. I want to tell you a medrash And I'm not like, I'm not into like, you know, this medrash is going to change your life. You know, like, you can't, you only can do that so many times before people stop taking you seriously. But this is a really important medrash. I'm not trying to like be, you know, like, I'm not trying to project something like, oh, this is like, pay attention now and your life will be changed forever. Maybe you'll remember it for the rest of the night. Maybe you will love it. I don't know. But I think this medrash like hits the nail on the head. Listen to this medrash. It's a Mashiach medrash. It's about Mashiach. It's about Geula. But it's about everything. The medrash contrasts the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and, who's Moshe Rabbeinu's kind of arch nemesis on the other side? Bilam. Very good. Bilam. What Moshe Rabbeinu was as a prophet to the Jewish people, Bilam was a Navi to the Umos Ha'olim, to the nations of the world. Chaver, listen to this medrash. It's so sharp. It's so poignant. It's so real. It's so honest. Listen to this. What's the language of Bilam? How does Bilam speak? What's the attitude of Bilam? How does Bilam talk about Mashiach? Bilam was saying like these crazy prophecies. What's the language of Bilam? Listen carefully. Pasuk in Parshas Bar. Bilam says, I can see in the future, I can see Mashiach. Big chizik, no? Bilam admits that there's a Mashiach. I see the rising star from the Jewish people. Darach Koichav, I see the star, I see it charting a path. I see v'kom shevet miyisrael. I see the scepter bearer, the king who's going to hold the scepter in his hand, the Melech HaMashiach. I see it. Bilam admits he sees it. But listen to what he says. He says, Erenu, we can perceive it. We can see it. I see it. V'lo ata with an ayin, but not now. Ashurenu, also a lashon of Re'iyah. Ashurenu, I can perceive it. I can see it. V'lo karov, but it's not close. You realize what a nasty psychological trick Bilam is playing on the Jewish people by saying that? On the one hand, he's like, he's saying what Hashem told him to say. He's doing something really, really evil. You know what he's saying? And it's not just about Mashiach. He's saying, oh, Mashiach's a real thing. Velo ata, but not now. No, not now. It's not like now. You see how crazy the world is now? It's not now. Ashurenu, oh yeah, I can see it in the distance. Velo karov, it's not close, not in your lifetime. You're going to end up the same way your grandparents ended up, and your great-grandparents ended up, and your parents ended up, which is what? They wanted it, and it never happened for them. They never saw it. So same thing with you. So don't waste your emotional energy on it. It's real, but it's not for you. So you understand why that's so much bigger than Mashiach? That measure is about everything. The measure is walking outside and seeing a guy a few years older than you who knows how to learn a Tosfos and saying, there's a Yetzirah that says, there are people who learn Tosos. You're not smart enough to learn Tosos. You're not smart enough to finish a Masechta. You're not Rav Shechter. You're not Rav Sachs. You're not going to finish Shas. And if you finish it, you're only going to know it superficially. You're never going to know it deep. Right? You want to work on not speaking Lashon Hara? There's people, but you're not the Chavetz Chaim. Who are you kidding? You want to work on your Shmira Seinayim? You're not like some tzaddik. You're like a regular kid. There's a Yetzer Hara that tells us it's real, but it's not for you. Davening with Kavana, your Chavrusa davening is really nice. And, yeah, you're not, davening's not your thing. Midos, there's that guy who has really amazing Midos. He was born that way. It's not for you. You can't work on that. It's not going to change. You're just an angry guy. That's what Bilam says to us. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Says the Medrash, Moshe always spoke the exact opposite language. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke the language of Karov. It is close. It is accessible. It's doable. It's real. It's realistic. No, cue up the Eitan Katz song. Ki karov elecha davar ma'od. It's very close. It's very accessible. It's very doable. The enemies of Klal Yisrael, they're so strong, they're so powerful, we'll never take them down. Moshe says, what are you talking about? Ki karov yom edam. The day of their downfall is very close. It's very realistic. Karov elecha davar. All of Yiddishkeit is karov. Mashiach is karov. What are you talking about? Don't listen to Bilam. Bilam says, velo karov. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Karov, Karov, Karov. It's so close. It's so realistic. Don't be depressed. Don't be despondent. Don't give up hope. Don't base your belief in Mashiach based on that one Amazon package that I'm missing. Don't be frustrated. Realize that we're getting close. And we can do it still this year. And it's not just silly talk. We say, oh, halavai, this year we won't sit on the ground on Tisha B'Av. Ha'amanti ki adaber. I believe it because I practice saying it. And I say it to help nurture my belief. And I go back to that first pasuk that we started with, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Yetzisicha Meretz Yisrael, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim, and Hashem's going to take us out again. So let me end with a story that captures this whole feeling that I'm trying to give over to you guys. The Choza of Lublin, the seer of Lublin. Okay? Not everyone's called the seer. A person who could see things, who perceived things, understood things, could see things beyond this world. How about a Baal Ruach HaKodesh? One of the great Hasidic masters. The Holy Choza of Lublin, whose yard site happens to be when? On Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av. Okay. That reveals also part of the mystery of who he was. When the Choza of Lublin passed away, tzaddikim, to have a possession from a tzaddik. I met someone once who had a gartel from a big rabbi. I said, can I see it? Can I touch it? Right? Somehow I got a yarmulke, got my hands on a yarmulke from tzaddik. Right? The possessions of a tzaddik, the chair, right? That the Rosh Hashiva sat in for years learning, right? They were selling Rav Yaakov, they're selling Rav Chaim Kanievsky's pants recently online. They were auctioning off his pants or something like that. Right? That was a thing, though. Stender, the table, right? The gartel, the sitter. This was the chair that he set his tehillim in. This was his shas that he used when he was sitting in the car. His mini shas. We like possessions of tzaddikim, right? This was the spoon that the rabbi ate his children with. We like these things. When the Choza of Lublin passed away, his children wanted his stuff, understandably so. Holy stuff, good stuff. They divided up the things. So one of his sons, Rav Yossel Lechurchiner, was traveling one time with some chevra. He's making his way through the forest, a long journey. And they came to an inn. And he wanted to stay. He was tired. He was exhausted from the road. He wanted to stay at the inn. So he comes to the innkeeper and he says, maybe I can stay here for a couple of nights. What do you charge? So he tells him the price. It's a little expensive. I got a few chevra here. It's going to... So he says, that's what I charge. Take it or leave it. So he said, listen, I have... My father was a holy man. My father was a holy man. And I have some things from him. You don't want to say exactly who his father was. My father was a holy man. I have some possessions. Maybe I can, we can barter. I'll give you something. A nice thing that I inherited from my dad. And we'll make a trade for a couple nights' stay. So he says, let me see what you got. Start going through the possessions. He sees this beautiful clock. This beautiful clock that belonged to the Choza of Lublin. He says, I really like that clock. It's beautiful. He said, if you let me keep the clock, I'll let you stay for a couple of nights. Okay. So they made a trade. That's what happened. And Rabbi Yossel and his chevra stayed for a couple of nights, and they traveled on. Good. A couple of weeks, a couple of months go by. Another tzaddik is traveling in the area. The Saba Kedisha from Radishitz. The Saba Kedisha from Radishitz. He comes to that place. He was a student of the Choza of Lublin. He comes to that place. He comes to the... And he's in, and the innkeeper's like, oh, big rabbi's here, okay, come in, please, you can stay by me, I'll give you the best room. He gives him a room. Happens to be the room is right above the room where the innkeeper sleeps. Okay. So the innkeeper's busy with all of his guests. It was like, they have food there also. Fine, the end of the night, the innkeeper's closing up. Goes to his room. And he hears the Heilige Tzaddik of Radishitz. He's wandering around in his room upstairs. He's like pacing back and forth. It was, wooden. He could hear, his... footsteps across the wooden floor, right, literally right above where the innkeeper, the owner of the motel, slept. It's getting late. It's 11. It's 11:30. Okay, he figures, he's finishing up his learning. Kriya Shema, while wandering near the mita or something like that. I don't know. He's doing his thing. He's wrapping up for the night. 11:30, 11:45, 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock. The story's not even 5 minutes long. 12 o'clock. He hears the footsteps going back and cross, back and forth across through, and pacing. The innkeeper is already brushed his teeth, he's in bed, he's under the covers, he's had a long day, he's trying to fall asleep. And he hears 12:30, 1 in the morning, pacing. What is going on upstairs? 1:30, the innkeeper dozes off, he wakes up, it's 2:30 in the morning, he's pacing, he hears this, pacing. At this point it's awkward, right? Meaning he's thinking, I should have knocked 3 hours ago and said, is Rebbe cold? Does he need another blanket? Is the pillow not comfortable? What is going on upstairs? I'm not going to go knock now at 3 in the morning. And the innkeeper's in and out of consciousness all night, falling asleep, dozing off, waking up. He keeps hearing every time he wakes up. He hears what on earth is going on upstairs? Finally, the morning comes. 7 o'clock in the morning, I figure it's he knows the Rebbe didn't sleep, but now it's like appropriate to knock. He goes upstairs, sheepishly knocks the door. The Rebbe opens the door. And before the innkeeper could even say to him, like, I don't apologize. Like, he didn't know what to say. The Saba Kadisha Radishit says, the clock on the wall, where'd you get that clock? Where'd you get that clock? So he says, what? He says, the clock in the room that I'm staying in, the clock on the wall, where did you get that clock? That has to do with anything, but he said, so there was a fellow who was traveling here a couple of months ago. He didn't have so much money, so I made a trade. I gave him the clock. Give him the clock. I got him staying. He says, tell me about that guy. What did he look like? You remember what he looked like? He starts to give like a general description, you know. Sounds like a Jewish guy. He says, you remember his name? I don't have it. If I told it to you, you'd recognize it maybe? If I mentioned it? You know, sometimes like if I reminded you of the name, would it? I think so, maybe. Who do you think it was? Was his name Yosela? Yeah, that was the guy. So the Rebbe of Radishit says, I knew it. He said, I knew that clock. That was my Rebbe's clock. I'm a student of the Chose of Lublin. That's the clock of the Chose of Lublin. So he's like, wow, okay. It's chashuv, you know? And sell that for a lot of money on eBay or whatever. Like, okay, that's good. So he's like, no, you don't understand. He's like, my Rebbe's clock is very different. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, let me tell you. He said, a clock is generally, by definition, a clock is a sad instrument. That's what he said. A clock is a very sad instrument. It sings a sad song. Talk about like a good old school clock where you can actually like hear it ticking away. He said, a clock is a really sad instrument. You know why? Because what is a clock? A clock is like mocking. Clock says to a person, look, another second has gone by. What'd you do? Accomplish sign? A minute went by. You know, what'd you do in the last minute? You learned the Mishnah. You could have said a parak tehillim. You could have done something meaningful with your life. Another hour has gone by. Another day has gone by. Right? Your life's ticking by. A clock is mocking a person. A clock can be such a painful message to listen to. If you're paying attention to time, time can be really painful. Because it's saying, look, another day has gone by. Another month has gone by. I can't believe it. Kollel's half over. What? We just got off the plane. It's half over already. The summer's flying by, it's crazy. A clock can be a really painful and sad instrument. He said, but my Rebbe's clock, listen carefully, Chavra, the Chose of Lublin's clock was different. So my Rebbe's clock was different. He said, my Rebbe's clock, it's hard to put this into words, but anyone who knew the Chose of Lublin, if you had been in his inner chamber, you knew it was different in there. He was a seer of Lublin, died on Tisha B'Av. He said, my Rebbe's clock was different. He listened carefully. And the Talmidim knew how to listen carefully. You could hear the clock saying to you, you're a second closer to Mashiach, you're a second closer to Mashiach, you're a minute closer to Mashiach, you're an hour closer to Mashiach. And then he said to the innkeeper, because he knew what he wanted to ask him, he said, and if you were in a room that had a clock on the wall that was saying to you the entire night, you're a second closer to Mashiach, you're a second closer to Mashiach, you're a second closer to Mashiach, do you think you could fall asleep? If you could hear what I could hear last night, do you think you'd be able to sleep? So we have to make a choice. We could be Bilam Jews, or we could be Moshe Rabbeinu Jews. You could say, since we got to Eretz Yisrael, we've been learning, we've been davening, we've been doing good stuff, and we haven't moved the marker. And we could be frustrated. Another day goes by, and Mashiach's not here, and the Gula is delayed. 1,955 years since Churban Bayis Shem. You can be really frustrated by that, and you can want to say, forget it. It's real, arenu velo ata, ashurenu velo karov, not in this lifetime. That's a Bilam attitude. You can be a Moshe Rabbeinu, you can be a Chose of Lublin clock, and you could say, you know what? Every day that goes by, I accomplish something. You know what I accomplished? At the very least, even if I did nothing, I'm a day closer to Mashiach. I'm a week closer to Mashiach. I'm a second closer to Mashiach. And I circle back to the opening words of our Sinai, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, as fundamental, as basic as it is for a Jewish neshama to believe in Hashem. It's not even a declaration other than a statement. It's not a commandment. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim. Fact, statement, they all believed it then. So I give us a brach, we should believe it now with the same simplicity. To make that choice to feel that it's shayach, it's realistic, it's reality. It's going to happen. There will be a time when I'll be able to open up that inside cover of my kinos and say, see, look, I knew it. Use for the last time, Tufshin Pei Beis. Use for the last time, Tufshin Pei Aleph. Use for the last time, Tufshin Pei. there's going to be a year when I'm able to write that and it becomes a reality. So don't be frustrated. And don't poke fun at the efforts that Klai Yisrael are making to bring the Gula. You guys are doing it. You came to Eretz Yisrael for a really powerful, meaningful, important summer. And you're doing it. And since the time we started this year, we're 40 minutes closer to Mashiach. Okay, so let's go daven Ma'ariv and hope that the Gula will come tonight. Thank you very much.